My watch says 2 o'clock.
If that's what your set aside.
Okay, it's set by satellite, so it should be accurate.
Well, if you geosync, it's right.
All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. First item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Everyone should have had a chance to review everything. Just need a motion to approve that.
So moved.
Second.
Perfect. Approval of the agenda. Do we have to do a separate motion for that? I don't remember.
Approved
that
as presented.
Okay. We approve that as presented. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
And then approval of the minutes. We had an amendment made to the minutes from our February 6th meeting. The election of officers was added, so need a motion to approve the amended minutes from the February meeting.
So moved.
And
second.
And then the minutes from our April 3rd meeting. Can I have a motion to approve those?
So moved.
Second.
And then several policies for consideration to be incorporated into the handbook, and that will take place on July 1st, 2018. We don't have to approve each of them separately, but they're all listed there under the documents. Everyone should have had a chance to review those as well. Is there any discussion on any of those policies?
This is not a consent item. Okay.
So moved.
Second.
Second. Okay. Next, consideration of personnel actions. We have pay adjustments effective June 24th for Margaret, Catherine, Matt, and Stephanie, and then longevity and step increases for Catherine, Matt, and Stephanie. Make sure I'm not missing any here. There were documents provided, the pay adjustment resolution and pay adjustment step and longevity. Any discussion on any of those?
Nothing. I would move as presented.
I'll second.
Okay. Moving on to the public forum. This is the time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the board today. Do we have anybody that wishes to come forward? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on. Additional items. Discussion and consideration of Crestview Mobile Home Park. Looks like we have a couple of folks coming forward to talk on that. Just a reminder, if you could introduce yourselves at the microphone.
Good afternoon, Jerry.
We'll get on here.
Hello, I'm Jerry Moore, Story County Planning and Development Department. I'm here to primarily talk about the Hoop building. The Board of Supervisors approved the zoning permit to extend the use of the temporary Hoop building that's currently located there for the use of reviewing existing mobile homes and removing asbestos from them. A little bit of background. The initial zoning permit was approved by the Board of Supervisors January 2. And again, it was to be used for reviewing the units, removing or encapsulating the asbestos materials. There was a condition in there that the unit, the Hoop building, was supposed to be removed by May 31st, 2018, and all the removal of asbestos was supposed to be completed by that time. There was also a condition that allowed the property owner to request an extension by the Board of Supervisors, which he did. He requested the extension on the 23rd of May, and he requested, however, to keep the building in its current location through May 31st of 2019. I had a conversation with him on that day. He indicated that he and his abater are working on anywhere from 5 to 10 mobile homes at a time. He indicated that he had 12 ready to be removed. During the time that I was there, based on the site review, based on the photos that I took, I counted approximately 37 units. So he said, of those, he's got 12 that are ready to be removed. Prior to our department preparing the staff memo for the recommendation on the extension request, had a discussion with Margaret and learned that his attorney was at the Board of Health meeting on the 3rd of this year and indicated that their plan was to remove all the mobile homes by November 29, and that was made part of our recommendation to the Board of Supervisors, which was approved. There's a benchmark built into it that by the end of August 31st, he should have no more than 18 units. And then again, all the units should be removed from the park by November 29 of 2018. And then the Hoop Building can be removed by the end of December. So here's just some site photos. I reported to the Board of Supervisors that I didn't see anything that was alarming. There's a few locations where it looks like he's doing some recycling of materials that are of value. And we've got a few photos to show that. But this is the Hoop Building. This is looking on the west side, looking to the northeast. It was buttoned up, so I could not see inside of it. This is to the northwest. This appears to be part of an existing mobile home. The frame is in place. The tires are in place. But you can see he's scrapping materials. And then further to the northwest, this is a site where an existing mobile home appears to have been removed. I think what you're seeing there is part of the deck. There are some materials there. You see an appliance. To the left of the screen is like an old dump truck that I think he's discarding some of the materials into. This is to the east of the enclosed fenced area. This is the northwest portion of that of the property. There's a lot of blocks that have been stacked, and he indicated to me that he gives those out to applicants that remove units from the park to shore up the units. This is inside the fenced enclosure. There's two existing semi-trucks, two semi-trailers. Those have been in place since I think the first time I visited the park. This is the southwest part of the park. It looked like he brought in some more fill dirt. I'm not sure exactly what his plans are for this dirt. I don't know if it has something to do with finishing out the sewage lagoon. I don't know. I have not obtained information from him about that. But all the mobile homes that were in this area, this is the far west area, it looked like they've been removed. This is looking to the northeast. This is the northeast-west road. And again, some more stacking of blocks. You see locations like this throughout the park. This is the north-south drive in the western portion. This is in the center portion. This is one of the east-west drives, just south of the Hoop Building. This is the furthest south building, or the closest road to Lincoln Way. Northeast location, there's about four or five units there that he told me are ready to be removed. Decks, I think, came from existing mobile homes. I think he's trying to sell those. Semi-truck, enclosed trailer, couple of vans, car. Those were there the last time we were there. So in summary, it looks like much of the mobile homes are in their current or original locations. There were a few that were scattered throughout the drives. As I said, I counted about 37 units. He told me 12 were ready to be removed, which would leave 25. We think it's essential that the Hoop Building stay there. Again, the Board of Supervisors approved the extension. It will help, you know, when the weather's cold and windy. And again, the time frame is November 29 to have all the units removed. By the end of August, there should be no more than 18. By the end of December, the Hoop Building should be removed. And I should note that Mr. Lemire was at the Board of Supervisors meeting, and he did indicate that he supported the conditions. Part of the part of the part of the motion memo that we put together for the Board of Supervisors indicated that if the Board of Health had a more restrictive schedule, reducing the numbers or the time frame to a sooner time frame, then we would take that request back to the Board of Supervisors for consideration and action. So again, May 29, Board of Supervisors approved the extension of the WHO building with these five conditions. One is the WHO building is supposed to be continue to be used for dismantling of hazardous materials. Again, by the end of August, no more than 18 units. All the mobile homes should be removed by the end of November or November 29. The WHO building should be removed from the property by the end of December. It should remain tied down in its current condition. He should continue to meet the Iowa DNR requirements. And then if he's removing materials, we ask that they be placed in a confined area like a trailer or a dumpster. No materials should be stacked higher than 10 feet. And then at least monthly, he should be removing these items from the property. So again, this is what the Board of Supervisors approved with these conditions. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Thanks. Any discussion?
I asked Brandon to come up to the mic and speak, ask him if he needed anything that he wanted to, any additional time. He said no. Any of these conditions he wanted to discuss or change, and he said no. So what you see is what we acted on last Tuesday. And I think it's pretty clear that you have a time frame that's going to move this ideally to a closure point. And certainly we can, as a board, do something more restrictive. But if you look, I would tell you, looking at point number two, from following our next meeting, from today to the next meeting, if that was not done, we have the means in a coming up meeting to address that. So I'm comfortable with that in the sense that we gave ourselves a timeline to walk and that he agreed to it, and it's on him and his abater to get us there. That's just how I feel, just in the discussion we had last week, talking with these folks here going forward.
Any other discussion? I'm comfortable with that as well.
Well, the timeline is run out for any penalties we put in there, right?
Ethan, would you like to speak to that, please?
Yeah, Ethan Anderson, County Attorney's Office. That is correct. Those were initiated May 12, 2017. And Iowa Code provides that those must be prosecuted within a year's time of the violation. So that would have been, we would have had to move forward on that prior to May 12th of this year. So those have all expired. Now, some of those conditions may still exist and would maybe warrant continuing investigation by Margaret's office to determine if more notice of violations need to be issued. At this point, though, I think it would be appropriate to remember that the reason the Board of Health got involved is because of the public health issue that existed at Crestview. That has largely been abated by the fact that the residents have left the park and that those conditions just simply don't exist. So I think my recommendation would be the Board of Health would be to take a back seat to the Board of Supervisors. And Jerry has a nice schedule here that hopefully Mr. Lehner will be able to comply with. Alternatively, the Board of Health here could direct Margaret to continue monitoring the situation out there with Brandt to make sure he's meeting his milestones and seeing if she sees any violations. But aside from that, I think, they've expired.
But my understanding now, really, that he's in non-compliance with planning and zoning. He's got a lot with a lot of abandoned trailers on it that falls outside the guidelines for you. Is that right?
That's correct. Margaret's identified a couple of different sections, but P&Z enforcement action may be best to handle some of those abandoned vehicles and things like that taking up place at Crestview Mobile Home Park.
So really, we don't have a public health problem now. We've got a planning and zoning problem.
Yes, largely a planning and zoning problem. I think there's an argument to be made that the vermin or rat harborage is still a potential issue. And then the asbestos, if it's discharged outside of the hoop building, could be a public health issue. But those are minor in comparison to what existed.
Those are minor compared to the planning and zoning issue.
Correct.
If I received complaints from neighbors, then it would come back to our office to investigate those complaints. Fires, garbage, rodents.
But you can check that. The major issue is alleviating the...
Getting rid of the junk, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I look at this, and knowing the timeline that is put before Grant and ourselves, I would say I would be directive in asking both Margaret and Jerry to have, prior to our next meeting, to go out there and see what in fact they find. Because you have, you know, clearly some things in regards to the piles that Jerry showed you some pictures on, that might be a potential rat harborage issue, you know, just in that sense. But I would like to know at or by the convening of the next meeting what they found.
Sure. I was going to ask that. Was there any discussion at the Board of Supervisors meeting about continued monitoring?
Well, no, Pastor, I think the difference was that we adopted these with the deference to this board to give direction to these departments. So I guess I would hope that we take a moment to think about it and tell them what we'd like to see in the intervening 3 months between this meeting and our next. And so...
Well, my only concern is we're into December again, and we could be snowed in for another year.
Well, the timeline there, though, is that this is an end of November. So, and he agreed to it, and his attorney has agreed to it, and we have to take these people at our word. I know you have been doing this longer than I, but it has been I think you've made progress. We have moved the people component out. It now is a property that is transitioning to something else. I think there's a money issue in regards to what it takes to bring it from its condition today to a saleable condition. And I'm mindful of that but he is, as Ethan is often reminds me of the fact that this is something that he articulated, expressed, and we have been operating on the fact that Grant wanted to take this from a occupied trailer facility into a saleable property. And that's just a journey we've all accompanied him on. So, but I would also, I don't want to get too far past the fact that if you would like to have Margaret's department, Jerry's department, or Ethan do something in our behalf as the Board of Health, now would be the time to tell them.
So what would you do if he's there? He only has half of them out by November.
I would turn to my attorney and say, what are my choices? What are my abilities?
By the end of August 18, if he doesn't meet his milestone, then Jerry's department would have some enforcement action, most likely revolving around the hoop building itself. So there won't be a lot of teeth to it aside from that. That's unfortunately where we find ourselves, or fortunately where we find ourselves. There's nothing, without the violations hanging over his head, there's no leverage we can exert. So it'd just be an investigation by Margaret into existing violations and then following the process set out in our code of ordinances for resolution of those violations.
And then as per the attorney for DNR, their order is that he not have any open burning, that he, if trailers are removed, they file the asbestos forms and follow the federal requirements for asbestos and to get rid of solid waste. But solid waste does not include junk trailers, apparently. So they're not really able to require him to remove the trailers either.
Are the titles clear on all these trailers?
No.
How do we move forward on that?
My understanding, and I'm looking at Artie Baldwin of the Treasurer's Office, and they're back in July of last year, he initiated the FED actions on all the trailers. That was kind of one of the preliminary steps to getting everything in his name, or in Crestview's name, so he could be in a position to sell them. So I believe get all the FED notices served on the residents, so you get all those trailers into his name. Now, there may have been some abandoned trailers that were still in individuals' names, not in Kresge's name. I'd have to look at the records to be sure on which numbers exist as far as abandoned versus in Kresge's name.
Well, he's not putting any in. He came in on Wednesday or Thursday last week after the board meeting. Told me about the discussion that was brought at the meeting and said that since then there was a hurdle that he didn't know that was causing him problems, so he didn't know how he was going to move forward. That's what he told me, and that maybe there was two that he could move right away.
And that was after the Board of Supervisors meeting?
Yeah, that was after the meeting. And I did get $247 out of it for a lot of his trailers that he did move, but he's still being kind of sly on how he's getting
that. Sure. $247.
It was my understanding, and I think it, when I talked to Ethan, that once he moved to evaluate his mobile home out of the park, he was supposed to then bring me back a form, an affidavit, to tell me that it was done, and I have not yet received any form of the trailer, but he said that he was going to move. So I don't know how this is going to be. I don't know how you guys are going to monitor it or at all.
I would ask Ethan, do we have any exposure to the county if he is moving trailers without abatement or moving them on the highway? Does the county have any legal exposure? Because he can do things in the dark of the night or at a time of his choosing that we would not be even know about, because we're really left with guessing what the nose count is on any given day in that park. We're trying to be assertive and directive, but once again, you make the case, and you've done it too many times, is that we only have a limited amount of ability to get things to happen.
That's correct. I never want to say we have zero liability, but I would say we have minimal liability. I mean, if he's voluntarily closing Kresge Mobile Home Park and electing to move it into where he can liquidate the property, any action he does, the liability rests with him. If he's violating DNR orders, if he's violating Board of Health orders, liability rests on him, not on the county. The final action we have to help clean up this property for the county would be if there is a violation and we can move as alternative relief to seek abatement, where the county could clean up the park and then bill him for the cleanup. That's always been an unpopular position with his attorney, because county cleanup would cost much more than his private cleanup operation. And so that's always been frowned upon, but that would potentially be a discussion that would happen in August or November if the timeline milestones have been met. But then again, we would need existing violations to tie that abatement enforcement action to. So we would need something from P&Z violation or a environmental health violation.
Do you all have recommendations for what you feel would be appropriate monitoring or prior to that, to our August meeting?
My recommendation would be to take a back seat to the Board of Supervisors, monitor the situation by having Margaret or someone from our office out there visiting every few weeks to make sure progress is being made and to look for violations. I mean, it used to be at the beginning of this process that you walk out there, there's too many violations to document. But now I think that situation has changed, and that's a good thing. It's good that it's changed, that he's getting more in compliance. But as Jerry said, selling the decks out there is a potential violation. He's not zoned to sell decks out there. He doesn't have the permit to do that. But so monitoring those types of situations would be good, and having those documented would be beneficial if, in fact, he doesn't comply with the schedule.
Thoughts on that?
I think you just showed your roadmap, as I see it, as I would ask the environmental health and P&D, and Jerry, you haven't said much lately.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we certainly could go out monthly with environmental health, the beginning of the month or the end of the month, and report, you know, document what we see, take photos.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
I think that'd be appropriate. So beginning of July and then beginning of August before our next meeting, that'd be two visits.
So two times before the next meeting?
Well, I would like to have you go the week before our meeting.
Yeah.
I would like something in real time that says, as of last week. So we're not acting on something that happened a month before. We're talking about something just the week prior.
Tuesday in August is our next meeting, so...
Yeah, what is that date?
Would you go Monday?
It is August
7th. Okay. So if you went beginning of August, it would fall into...
Just something that would give us a real-time snapshot of what we are discussing, because we're left to speculate unless we're convening a meeting there.
We get to July meeting or whatever this is, and we've got 20 trailers. We don't have any documentation.
Then I go back to my attorney.
And then I think if we've documented those violations from you all being out there monitoring, we have a little more teeth to take some action. Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, yeah, he would be too over. He's supposed to have 18, and it'd be recognition that he moved 17 mobile homes. The board could then inquire, does he have a reasonable chance of completing removing 20 by November 29th? And if you can document that, then, again, that'd be a decision for the board of supervisors, I suppose.
Could you also send us that report at the end of every month?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Like a memo?
Yeah, if you would, that'd be good. So we
monitor
the progress. Every month, send us that.
And if we see violations, should we issue notices or just report what we see?
I think it's appropriate to report what you see, and then the notices could be issued later.
Okay.
Yes.
So essentially, we would be asking Environmental Health and P&D to visit monthly, so end of June, beginning of July, then end of July, beginning of August. So two times prior to our next meeting, and not issuing violations, but making note of any violations. Correct.
That's how I, this conversation I heard.
Okay. We'll do it.
On my end,
yeah,
my partner in crime, was in charge of all this. So if he would come in, then am I supposed to become, because I don't really know. These are the only FD cases we have. And some of them he's been wanting to come in and move that aren't in his name, that taxes aren't paid. So am I not supposed to do clearances or what?
No, we can discuss that outside the meeting, and that's not appropriate for the Board of Health to consider. But I have had discussions with his attorney to address that.
Okay. Can I get a motion regarding the monitoring by Environmental Health and P&D?
I would make a motion that we direct Environmental Health and Planning and Development to make two site observations prior to our August meeting to note any violations that they might see or issues that might come before would be in our purview to address as a Board of Health.
And a second?
Second.
All right. Did you guys have anything else?
Is there anything that I would ask just at this point? Is there anything that we left that you would like us to empower you with?
No, not at this time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Next, we have discussion and consideration to have Fernald property owners with outstanding violations appear before the Board of Health for review of violations and remediation plans. Margaret, I think that's you. Do we need to vote?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do we need to...
We need
the motion and the second, or just vote?
I have the motion.
She has it.
Okay. And John seconded?
Just go all in favor.
Okay. So a vote regarding the Environmental Health and P&D monitoring of Crestview Mobile Home Park. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Thanks.
Thanks,
Sam. Okay, great.
Okay. So for now, we've run into a situation that's been going on for a while where there are two or three individuals who will not remediate their violations. And I was thinking it might be appropriate at this time to bring them before the board, not unlike we handled Crestview and had them come in and talk to you rather than go before the courts. We could go that route also. Just wanted your input on that and a vote if that is the direction you want to take. So one violation is the house burned and it's still just sitting there. They will not remove it. I don't know, you know, what their circumstances are, why they're not. And then another one that did not, that had sewage discharging to the neighbor's lot. And they've moved out, it seems, but then they had the trailer there for a while. It's just very hard to know if anyone's in it or not in it. And it, you know, it's not our job to monitor their house every week to see if someone's living in there and causing problems again with their wastewater. So at very least bring those two property owners in and then possibly a third, but we haven't been able to serve them notice. We can't find them.
Where is this located at?
In Fernald, so it's actually Nevada address, and it's a small town, unincorporated town, northeastern Nevada.
By proposing this, would you have... I'm sure it's probably out of frustration. Do you think that it would give us an increased likelihood of success?
Yes, I think people take you quite seriously.
Okay.
How long are you over the citations?
The one, it's been years. But because they moved people out, it wasn't, you know, an immediate, it wasn't an emergency. The other one, it burned. When did that burn, Matt? Forever ago. You know, it's fine. They need to really take it up a notch.
So you've given a violation already?
Yeah. The fire one I did not because I did not receive complaints.
So how long of conversations have you been having with these people? I mean,
it's a letter battle. No one will really come forward. I'm forgetting his name, the individual that you know that used to work at, or works at. I haven't talked to him. Some of those Fernald meetings, I would talk to him, but then it always just, nothing happens.
Discussion.
I refresh out of a lawyer, so I can't ask him.
Yeah. If you're not comfortable, I don't even know if they would show up. So if you're not comfortable, I could start the notice of violation process again because I didn't realize till this week that NOBs can only live 1 year and then they're gone. Or so I can reissue notices of violation, and then it goes a month, and then I can issue citations, and then it goes to court. That's the other route. Or I could issue notice of violation, give them an option to come and talk to the Board of Health, and if they don't show up, then the citation. Yeah, so sort of an interim step that might bring them to action.
I do think it would be a good idea to reissue notice of violation. I'm assuming those have ran out.
They have. They have. Yes.
I would be comfortable in giving a letter to the effect that we will move to the citation phase with your absence from a meeting, your attendance. Well, we can't compel them to. We certainly suggest they come on their own behalf. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, this is not a personal thing. This is, you're just looking for an outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly there are things, I know the properties, I know some of the property owners, and if you don't compel them to do something, it will not get done. And I don't think this is an unreasonable request. This has been going on for quite some time.
And we have received complaints as well.
And we have an obligation to the taxpaying neighbors that you wouldn't want to live next to what she was describing, nor would I. So I think that, you know, you can split the baby on this one. Or my suggestion would be issuing of notice of violation with a letter of contact explaining that on that the next Board of Health meeting, you will be an agendaed item. You will be asked to come and speak in your own behalf and explain circumstances, and I would leave ourselves the option or the availability to move to citation. Even, you know, I would find it personally frustrating if somebody comes in here and tell me, oh, I wish I had more time. And I think, because they don't need more time, they just need to do something here. And I would have to say, if you're not hanging a citation where they're fined in court, you're probably not going to move them. So
my question, should that letter be sent asking them to come one more?
Come on up, Matt. We got a nice chair. It's probably
yeah. Maybe you don't talk to me.
Should the letter asking them to come to a Board of Health meeting be sent before the notice of violation and go on that path? Because what if we do that, send the notice of violation, asking them to come, they come, and then that ends the end of it. But if there's another situation in the county where we ought to just issue a notice of violation and then go straight to citation, do, you know.
Well, I'm looking for a little direction here because this is more clearly something you deal with, but well, what these problems are longstanding. In the sense that, you know, your department is just looking to see a burned home cleared up in a house with a non-working septic system, I'm not sure what.
Yeah, I just don't want somebody, you know, a year down the road say, well, the guy at Fernald got to come in front of the Board of Health before he got a citation, you know.
Well,
or if that step was taken out.
Then I would, that's...
You know, we got to treat everybody the same.
Hearing that, what's anybody else think?
Well, we should have acted on the first notice of violation, actually, before the year was up.
Well,
yeah,
like
the
yes, but I mean, the no one was living there, so it was so. In really, you can, you know, cut off your water and not have wastewater, and that would abate the violation. And he claimed that he moved people out.
There's nobody living in there now.
That's what he claims. For the longest time, they had a trailer parked there, so I don't know.
I think it's been occupied because they're running the electricity from the house. And I suspect, truth told, there's somebody living in the RV.
Yeah, but that RV is now gone.
Well, then, I don't know.
Yeah. So that's why, you know, in fairness, if he wasn't discharging anymore, because he ended up moving out to into a different
yes.
An apartment in town.
So what's the health hazard at this point? If there's nobody living there, and it's just that burnt house, is that a health hazard?
The burnt house is well, people are complaining, but yeah, if kids can get in, it's dangerous that way.
Or does that go back to the zoning? Situation.
Well, you know, it's a very fine line between the two departments,
yeah.
And they're very, the regulations are written so that it's kind of vague. It, you know, ours are nuisances, and theirs are zoning things like, I don't know, planning information, but...
Jerry?
You know.
we wedged ourselves between departments.
We lost our attorney, but we
thank you, Matt.
So burnt out buildings,
yeah,
what we're planning to do.
I think what Marty's trying to say is with the zoning ordinance, we don't have the teeth maybe that she would have through her regulations. We have definitions of junk and I guess a salvage yard type situation. And we have had this discussion before about what's the best approach, and maybe we need to talk to the county attorney's office about it again.
But this is an age-old problem where these situations just don't fall cleanly through the hole that describes the violation. You know, they're kind of that way, kind of not. And legal usually doesn't want to go with something that is not concrete. And I get that they're the smart ones. So
if you get challenged, you want to be able to have
yeah.
something solid to fall back on.
So, but I know that the residents there want these two problems gone.
Mm-hmm.
My interpretation of what you sent out earlier with the code between mm-hmm. the two departments, hazards fall more under environmental health. Is mm-hmm. that right? Like mm-hmm. asbestos, in this case, I suppose, whatever is in that burned down house.
Yeah, it's a partial burn.
Hazards.
It was not a complete thorough burn. There's a part of that house still stands.
So that would be a nuisance. Public health hazard.
I think to me that's more of a clear determiner on that property. Then you move to the virtually you're talking about adjoining properties.
Okay.
Yeah, these are not scattered around. It. I mean, one problem is abutting another, but that next problem. Mm-hmm. And
different owners, though.
Different owners.
And the ultimate goal is to get them to take action. So
to clean up.
Really, we.
So an unoccupied structure, but without a working septic system, has no. Who's got traction on that? In the sense that, I don't think it's the most well maintained home. If mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if you would find it with broken out windows. I don't know how you would find it. I know that there had been a problem, but people breaking in to occupy it to turn around and get chewed out. You know, that was a very sad story on a family side without going into detail. But
can you issue a violation there if they truly did?
You know, without the wastewater, with it sitting empty, no, I don't think so. But once you start getting broken windows and animals living in there, I think that I can.
So if the house didn't have structural integrity as the roof was collapsing or
the roof
windows
is good,
out
actually.
Or anything, that is that point you can be assertive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think so. But the roof, that's the only good thing is the roof.
I know, it's not that old. I know, I was looking where you walk around on this one.
Or maybe just focus on the burnt house for now, and as soon as someone is living.
I would have to say, I would think that it's just right up over here to go out and look to see if, in fact, that you have a non-intact structure, or what you find. I have no idea what you find, but I think it's worthy of, your time, somebody's time to go look at on our behalf.
Do we have any pictures, past pictures, anything of that?
I have past pictures I can send.
Mm-hmm. If she were to go out and find violations, would we want her to issue a notice or just make note of them for now? What do you think?
It's been
that's
this long.
Kind of an easy question.
I think you do a notice of violation, but it's been this long.
Mm-hmm. For the fire, but not the wastewater one?
Well, either one.
I guess it's my feeling that if you find something there that
if you
can
find it, write it up.
Before I would do something.
I would say anything that's current, a current violation would be an NOV. Yeah. If there's something that clearly falls into the situation that just because of the problem that these respective properties have brought to their community, and have been told to us by the people that are responsible with their properties that I think you have the duty to uphold the integrity of the community.
And I get that out so that we have, 30 days, so when at our next meeting, then we can decide whether we want to give them a citation or not.
Okay.
So we need to be 30 days.
What if the fire department goes out and inspects it and says it's not safe to live?
I don't know.
Well,
I don't know that. Or not an unreasonable question, but I don't know how you engage. You know, it falls into the Nevada fire coverage area, but I don't know if they would even be inclined to be assertive here. I don't know. Okay, do we have the ability to compel compliance? Just because we want to see doesn't mean that we have a legal right to see.
And it's really tough because Karen doesn't have ability.
That keeps coming up. I see you laughing over there. So,
I can call the fire department and ask them.
Yeah,
how's that?
That is something you can request them to do.
I would say I'm not directing anybody to do anything that's outside of their scope of their job, but I don't think it is an unreasonable request that we see the integrity of property that has been noticed to us as being in violation or suspect. and I would let they be the determiner on where we go with that knowledge. I mean, we don't know what we don't know, but we would ask somebody on our behalf to find out for us.
But she's already issued a notice of violation.
Things change. But things change. Yeah. You know, it's just like Crestview. I mean, Crestview from the start of the year to today is slightly different. So I suspect this might be or could be the case. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think your thought to put them out there wouldn't be a bad idea. Anybody else? We've slow walked it up to this point, so I don't think we're running it.
I don't know. We have a state fire inspector that goes around and looks at the building or is safe to move back into or not.
I would turn on coding in regards to anybody want to swing at that.
I mean, the state fire marshal's office does inspections for electrical work in the unincorporated area, but yeah, I don't know if they would have
jurisdiction. Like that, each department has a fire marshal, and it's there. If it's over them, then they ask the state for assistance.
So what you're saying is the Nevada Fire Department could be asked to be part of the inspection process, and if they see something overt, they could then turn to the state, and then the state qualify what they think they suspect.
If it's burnt that bad, it's not going to pass electrical inspection anyway. So, you couldn't live in it if you wanted to at this point.
Oh, you're not going to live in one. The other one you wouldn't want to live in.
That's what I mean. So,
well,
are we asking the fire department to inspect the one that burned down or the one that is dilapidated?
Kind of, well, the one that the partial burn is not even an habitable structure.
No,
it's rubble.
That would be a clear notice of violations you could issue.
I think
without mainly talking about the
other one, the adjacent property.
And then the one with the control fire on the west side, they took care of that for the most part. So issue a notice for the fire one and go out and see if there's anyone living. Once again, go knock on the door and see what condition that house is in, and if anyone's living, issue any notices and time it so that they can come before the board before the citation is issued if they so choose.
Does that sound good? I think that's perfect.
I'm comfortable with that because we give ourselves the latitude to move from violation to citation through the next meeting. Don't want to do this, but you get left in a position. It's just like it's not for the lack of trying.
So to summarize, we'll ask Environmental Health to go monitor and inspect the current status of both properties, issue notice of violations if you're able to, and give them the option,
the
strongly suggested option to
convey what
come
I would
to our next
convey
meeting.
To the property owners what you find and where that falls in our guidelines and statutes. Anybody desire to want to ask the fire department to go with them, or do you have any discomfort in that remand?
I can call and talk to the fire department.
Yeah, because I'm not looking to create ourselves any legal issues or hardships. I don't want to, I don't want the county to get sued. I don't want to get sued. And I was just here to do the right thing, and unfortunately, it has slow walked itself into this corner.
Can I get a motion?
I would move that we direct planning and zoning, environmental health, and if willing, the Nevada Fire Department to assist in inspection of the two properties that were brought before us today.
Can
I second?
I'll second. Vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you.
Thank
good luck.
Thank you very much. Agency and departmental reports. Story County Public Health. Ministers. Go ahead. Just a reminder if you could introduce yourself.
Okay, my name is Sherry Zook, Z-O-O-K. And I'm taking place for Teresa Ferrari and Les White. I submitted a local public board of health report that was prepared by Patsy Beasy, our financial. And then I've also submitted a website visit that was done in March by Iowa Department of Public Health. They came and did an audit of these different reviews, and it was found that we had no deficiencies or no corrections. It was only a select recommendation regarding family reunification, and it's just a recommendation. And so we are working with Michael Moreland. He's the service area coordinator for the coalition and working with the Red Cross on doing a family reunification center.
Okay. Any questions for Shelley?
I don't see any exciting disease names here as we've had in times past. I think my very first meeting we had tularemia, which is
yes.
Good Lord.
And interesting.
Yeah, in Story County, you have rabbit fever in Story County. Got here. So I would have to say this, as we're in the quiet, in the non-flu season, you know, I would have
correct.
To say we're in a
correct.
Better yeah. place than we were just not that long ago.
I saw we had cyclospora pop up again, but...
Yeah,
just
we
in the state.
This past week we had crypto and an E. coli, but none have been so far correlated with the romaine lettuce.
Good.
They have us do a really investigation, a long investigation.
Mm-hmm.
On June 13th, diseases are kind of slow right now, till fair time. People pet cows. And
that drums things up again.
Yeah. And senior clinics are busy. Immunizations are kind of slow because it's the end of school, so parents aren't really worried about that. So we are going to put on a press release probably to do meningitis and Tdap before school starts. We are in the process of trying to get bicycle helmets through Mary Greeley's going to help us with that, and hopefully United Way before ride for children to have those fitted at our VFC clinic in reflective pattern, reflective on the bikes. And then regarding heat advisory, IDPH sent a template out about going to malls, cooling centers. Right now we don't establish a cooling center, it's kind of Red Cross, but to advise people what to do to prevent heat, stroke, exhaustion, and to go to the mall, the library. So I'm hoping to get that published. I sent it over to community relations in the papers. And then on June 13th, we have a POD, point of dispensing event with RSVP, Retired Senior Volunteer Program, to recruit non-medical and medical volunteers. We're going to do an exercise and an education, 5:30 at night. Any questions?
Appreciate the quiet.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Denise from ISS.
Good afternoon, Denise.
Good afternoon. A light reading for you.
You've never had a light
August.
Reading.
This is all we get.
I know. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're afraid.
She never has light reading.
It's like a YSS rule to always bring paper. I'm not sure. It must be in our bylaws. Anyway, Denise Denton, Youth and Shelter Services. Okay, so a couple things. We all survived the school year as of last week. So I don't have the total numbers for everybody we saw, but I can give you some ballpark. We probably saw at least 1,200 middle school kids with Project Alert alone. Just so you know, some of that is funded by the county, and half of those kids are funded by the county, half of those kids are funded by our comprehensive grant. The first years, which would be sixth and seventh graders, and we see those kids like 13 times. So this is a fairly long program. It goes over several months. That comes through funding from the state. All the second year, and those are called booster sessions, so those would be all your seventh and eighth graders, depending on the school. Some schools do it sixth and seventh graders, some do seventh and eighth. But the second year, we see those kids about four times, and that's really meant to refresh their memory. We also do a thing with the Ames School, their booster sessions, where I work with the Mayor's Youth Committee kids, and we do yet another program with those kids to remind them of what they've learned. So we also saw about 400 kids, mostly in Eastern Story County, with Too Good for Drugs, and those are like third and fourth graders, the multi-age group. And then we probably saw at least another 1,200 kids just in general programming, so high school classes, college classes, community classes, and that's just with alcohol. With our over-the-counter and RX kinds of programming, there were probably 32 programs that we did aside from the other stuff. And again, those are middle school, high school, but that's a separate program than Project Alert, or a separate lesson, certainly, or a separate program altogether. And with marijuana, we probably did about almost 30 programs, different programs, and that is mostly in that nine-month period. We don't do a ton of programming in the summer. With about 800 different people. And again, a lot of those are college students, which is a good crowd to talk to about that very thing, and high school students as well, so, and some community stuff. So school's over, but we started our summer programming at Collins Maxwell yesterday, and we do the EATS and innovative programs, I think, starting next week. I'm not involved with that. But so, you know, the numbers I just gave you, those are numbers where we were doing substance abuse programming. We also do a lot of the youth development stuff, and that's what we do in the summertime. And those kids also get fed during that part of that program, so it's also sort of a feeding program as well. I gave you an article updating you on the vaping. I always try and reinforce your positive behavior on that. And I think it's interesting that in this article, he's fairly skeptical, you know, trying to weigh what are the goodness, badness about vaping. And, you know, it is good for some people if they can quit smoking altogether, but what he has found is that the vaping usually continues on, and that it still acts as an opportunity to renormalize for young people, and we don't want that. I also read an article, which I did not include, that came out of a clinical trial talking about what is the best way to get people to stop smoking, and what they found is if you pay them, that seems to be, and that doesn't even seem to work very well. And that just really speaks to how addictive nicotine is. So, you know, we're always trying to get people not to start in the first place. And Laura Bell is our tobacco control specialist. Her office is here in Nevada. So she was saying yesterday in a staff meeting that she's having a very difficult time working with health organizations in the county. They don't really want to talk about cessation stuff very much, or, you know, quiz their patients on that. And so she was saying, if you know anybody that you could convince to be more proactive on that, that would be really helpful. So if you could get on that, that would be a good thing. But it just is very difficult. It's a tough topic. Concerning marijuana, we have a new and improved, as it were, addendums to our cannabidiol law in Iowa, and I wanted to bring you up to date on that. Now we're going to have our very own manufacturing sort of situation in Iowa. I think the name of the company is Med Pharma. They have to pay about a $200,000 licensure fee to grow in Iowa, which means they're going to need a lot of patients to make that up. And currently, there are only 350 people enrolled. So one of the things the legislature has done is increased the number of conditions that qualify for this. I do not have a list of that. But what they have set up is an advisory board of 8 people, one of which will be one law enforcement. Those people are going to be appointed by the governor. They have absolutely no money in the budget for oversight. So there'll be nobody sort of paying attention to that. There is no mechanism by which to check if people are doctor shopping, if they have a criminal background, and whether they will card or not. But the way the premise works is you will go to your doctor. The doctor doesn't have to agree that you need it or not. They just have to verify that you have a condition that qualifies for that. Then you take that agreement to a dispensary where there is no medical personnel on site. The people at the dispensary will decide what it is you need and how much you need and how often you need it.
So they are distributing cannabis with no medical...
Pretty much is what it sounds like to me. Yeah.
What could go wrong there?
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? And like I said, you need the medical card is going to be $100 per patient, $25 for people on Medicaid. So they get a break on that. There will be 5 dispensaries up and running by December of 2018. Des Moines, Waterloo, Sioux City, Cedar Rapids, and Dubuque, I believe. You know, one of the things that Colorado did that most people don't realize is they had 115 municipalities that put a city ordinance in place that banned dispensaries within their city limits. And that might be something that people in Iowa want to look at, because at this point there's only 5 dispensaries, but that's sort of how they start out in Colorado as well. So that's a concern.
Do you see us
like
going
me.
To a legislative tipping point here in Iowa?
Is it going to a what? I'm sorry.
You see us, I mean, as you watch this play out year after year, you know, letting them on the Iowa legislature, you see proponents for legalization. Do you see us moving to a tipping point?
Well, at this point, what they're dispensing, they're not allowing for vaping, suppositories, edibles, or smoked or plant form. So only the oil.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, people have been selling oil in Iowa for a while and claiming that it was legal, which it has been not. It has not. So just the enforcement has been a difficult thing, or, you know, it's not been enforced, I should say. Do I see a tipping point? I hope we're already there. But, you know, it really is following the playbook of a lot of other states at this point that have started out sort of low. One of my old roommates is the director of all court services in Minnesota at this point. She sort of runs the Supreme Court and was telling me that they have the most stringent of all the medical marijuana laws in the country, but I just read that they are now allowing medical marijuana for sleep apnea, even though the people who sort of are in charge of sleep apnea have recommended it not be used for that. But it really would not be good for sleep apnea, because it doesn't allow you to sleep well in the first place. You know, marijuana is really interesting in that its main job is to be a hallucinogen. So it distorts perception. But it also, you know, hallucinogens borrow from both sides of the aisle. They're sort of bipartisan drugs in that they speed you up and they slow you down simultaneously. This is the one time when I don't think bipartisanship is a good thing. So it ramps up your heart rate tremendously, particularly in the first hour, and then it dies down pretty soon after that. But that doesn't allow you to sleep well. I mean, you know, it gets you to sleep. It's like alcohol. It gets you to sleep, but it doesn't let you stay asleep very well. And then, you know, you feel like you're moving really slow. The thing, the pack that I included for you is, this is something that I think policy makers need to be cognizant of, because if this is a medical condition, just like you cannot not hire somebody because they have a pain condition and are taking opiates, but they can't use under the influence, what people don't understand, I think most of the time, is that the effects that you know, make you feel floaty and euphoric only last for a few hours with marijuana, but impairment lasts for at least 24. So if you've got somebody who has a condition by which they're saying, you know, I should be able to use this, if they're driving your snowplow, that's a bad thing. You know, if they're driving a forklift, not good. But the packet that I gave to you is a white paper that I provided to Iowa State about a year ago, and their general services folks, they're people who drive trucks around. And it speaks to several lawsuits by individuals in other states that have similar laws that the court went with them. So you have to make accommodation for those people. You don't want them driving a snowplow, but you can't not let them come to work either in those conditions. So to me, that says that's a little something maybe you want to get out in front of, since the county hires people, to start looking at how you accommodate that sort of thing. What is that going to look like? So whether you say that, you know, people will not be hired if they use a federally scheduled one drug, because federal law supersedes state law. I don't know how you do that. But it supersedes state law in all states. So I'm not sure how they won those lawsuits otherwise. Anyway, just a little something I thought I'd throw in your lap. Lately.
Yeah.
A little good news, bad news. Speaking of bad news. Speaking of good news. The opiate task force continues to work on things. I think what we're going to be doing, we meet next week, as a result of that town hall meeting, we're looking at doing a series of educational seminars that I think will start in September. One of the things, the Prevention Policy Board met yesterday, and we had a mother and son from Ames who came and talked about their experience, and I think that sort of thing will be something that is included in the seminar so that people can understand what they did and how they got help and, you know, a pathway through that, hopefully. The Cheyenne seems to have not had much fun, but they have come out the other side of that and are very hopeful. And he has, as of next week, has a year of sobriety under his belt, so that is hopeful. But that group continues to meet. And I'm really encouraged with the work that they're doing and the number of people who have collaborated on that. I mean, a lot of people who don't normally sit in the same room have come together on that, and the number of people coming to those meetings has increased. So the interest has not fallen off. A representative of Joni Burns' office was at our meeting yesterday to listen to that as well. And then all of a sudden, the Iowa Department of Public Health is interested in meth again. I shouldn't say it quite like that, but that is not part of our comprehensive grant. But they are interested in and wanting agencies to start looking at what is happening in their county. Not that we don't pay attention to that, but that's not part of our comp grant. And so just we're meeting tomorrow to look at preliminary numbers. But I can tell you I called my guy who knows these things, one of our detectives who works on the Central Iowa Task Force. And the numbers he gave me last year in the Central Iowa Task Force, so that's Story County and surrounding counties, they confiscated about 60 grams of methamphetamine in the calendar year. To date, by the end of April, it's 2,300 and change. I don't remember what that other number was. So just in the first 5 months of this year, we have almost as much confiscated as we did all of last year. So meth is not going away. And this is a detective I bring in to talk to my Iowa State students. And they always want to know about heroin, and I always go, yeah, we do heroin, but we still do way more meth.
I was at a city council meeting last night and had a deputy present, because they always have a designated deputy for contracted law enforcement. And he said he'd been doing it. He's not quite a 10-year law enforcement official. And he said through the course of the weekend, he arrested the same guy for meth consumption Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
That's
consistent. You know, he said he's a frequent flyer, and he said he met the man. He's running down one of our county highways claiming he was being shot at.
But wasn't.
But, well, he said, yeah, I'm standing out there. I'm just, it's he and me. He's jogging at a pretty high rate of speed. He said, there's no gunfire, but he was sure he's being shot at.
Well, and one more time, you can hallucinate on any drug.
No, I get that, but it's a fresh story along the lines that it's just like, yes, as we just had a presentation with the Sheriff's Department in regards to drug usages, we find it now, and you're seeing more of an uptick and a more reintroduction into the cocaine as, you know, things ebb and flow. But, and the deputy's story would have been wonderful if you guys could all have heard it, but he said it had run hot, but it had run its course and it had subsided. What he said, it was his experience as he was seeing it, as he was talking about the Sheriff's Department in Story County, was saying it kind of rising back up.
Yeah.
So just a reinforcement.
A game of whack-a-mole.
Yeah, there you go.
So any other good news? That's it.
Nope. But I thank you. I do read this stuff. I go back to my desk and I look at this, and it's just like I was a child of the 70s, and you sit there and say, you know, I've got friends that just, oh, my God.
That's the other thing I didn't mention, is the level of THC in the Iowa cannabidiol is only 3%. But there was a bill, and I might have mentioned this at the last meeting, that they were sort of, you know, shopping around the floor of the legislature that would have taken the ceiling off of that. But 3% is what people were using in the 70s, and
yes,
they were plenty baked.
That's
so.
Oh, yeah. Literally.
Double.
Any other questions?
No, I enjoy your presentation.
Yeah,
Denise.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Thank you.
Okay.
Please.
Story County Environmental Health.
Burger James.
Yeah.
Frequent flyer.
Frequent flyer. Am I going to have this computer problem again? No, I'm not.
We're going to warm it up again. We are replacing a lot of these. We have some failing systems in here that the county spent good dollars on many years ago, but we find that they're slipping from us, and not the least of which that computer and that projector.
So, good afternoon. June 5th already, hard to believe. So we're winding down for this period for the grants to counties. We have about $5,000 remaining, and probably still a couple more wells to plug. So we've only done, for this calendar year, only four well permits for water, 8 pluggings, 1 cistern, 0 rehabs, 62 water samples, and 14 time of transfers. So pretty busy with the well program. State Hygienic Lab, we continue to collect samples to be tested for the bacteria, nitrate, nitrite, and neonicotinoids, and arsenic. So we submitted 17 in May, and we're shooting for 25 total for the May and June group, and we'll get the results back. This doesn't cost any additional money for the county. There was a little bit of arsenic that showed up in, I think, 3 samples from the winter session, and we're seeing some more hits for this group coming in May and June, too. Nothing over the limit from this batch, but getting close, so that's of concern. For septics, 34 permits were issued, 7 permits are in process, 6 repairs, and 20 inspections. It's behind last year, but the Cameron Estates kind of bumped up our numbers last year. Tattoos, Kathy did 4 of the inspections. We only have 4 tattoo places in Story County, so she's done inspecting them for the year. Tanning, she still has 9 to do. She's already done 11, and some of those are multiple beds. And she also continues to give the test for the managers at our office here. They come in. Matt has been busy with the pool and spa inspection program. We have 47 total establishments. All 24 indoor facilities have been inspected. About 10 have been inspected for the outdoor ones as of Memorial Day, and about 13 remaining. Matt, do you want to come up and say anything about the pool program? No. He always has a lot to say downstairs. I'll just say that, yes.
The state's been thousands and thousands of dollars on the system that they can't even give you a report on what pools are in Story County. So.
Yeah, the state is getting less and less helpful in all aspects of the programs, and it's budgeting. You know, people retire, they do not replace them, and then the software. I don't know if they just don't have support, Matt, but good heavens, you know. Let's see, manure management plans, they do not, so as I mentioned the last meeting, they can submit their annual updates online, and if they have a map change or they're adding acres where they land apply, they do not provide that information. So we decided to stop mapping them. And if they have questions on manure management, they have to call DNR because we just don't have any updates. And for that matter, DNR doesn't have any updates either, so they're just going to have to deal with it, I guess. Septic pumper inspections, I still do the 2 in Marshall County with no land applications, so I check the records in the trucks. And then there's 2 in Story County, Drain Check and Earl Septic, that land apply. So they take more involved inspections. Income from this program is $6,000 for the year. Drain Check, this is where they land apply on the property that they own. This particular area that is shown here is way back off of Lincoln Highway, so it's not close to houses or anything like that, but that is standing sewage, standing septage that you see there, and I think it's ponded because of the fats, oils, and greases or fog that they've been land applying. Bottom right is the doggy doo-doo bags that they pick up from the Ames Dog Park. And then this was the follow-up day. Again, still ponded. So I'm going to go out. I'm going to have to make it a practice to just keep going out there and seeing if this goes away. I'm going to ask if they disc it in and plant it and quit applying for this to this particular area for a while.
Is there a violation for that? There. I didn't think you put the fats, oils, and grease on the land.
Well, it goes back and forth. DNR was very unclear as to whether or not they can do that. So they're choosing to go ahead and land apply, wanting to get away from that and bring it to the Ames treatment plant. The treatment plant recently dropped their rates for fog, so hopefully that will change soon.
But you couldn't go in there and ditch that as wet as that is.
Well, good point. But I mean, when it dries up, it'll get a crust on it, and then work that in hopefully, and then quit applying in that area for a good while.
That ground has already been worked for the spring. That's planted.
Corn.
Well, no, I know where they're talking, but I'm just saying that picture, you know, it looks like those are planted rows, but and people don't realize, they drive past it all the time, they just don't realize what they're looking at. It's right by country landscape. Yeah. So you see that grass lane that goes south? That's what you're looking at. There's a reason it's there.
Yeah, that is.
South side.
It seems, and both have that same approach, and I know it's tough to get enough land to land apply, but when you think about it, you know, they're counting it as 80 acres or whatever, and most of the time they're applying on this one little strip, not on the 80 acres, because the crop is in, and you can't get your trucks in there without damaging the crops.
Yeah.
So I think the regulations have to change or start bringing it all to the landfill.
Some of them take it to. I had a pumper guy that was doing Sam's Club's grease interceptors, and they take it to Des Moines.
Yeah, and it's really cheap down Des Moines, but transportation is expensive and timely.
They recycle it somehow.
They burn it.
And,
mm-hmm.
And you can, up to a certain temperature threshold, reuse the oil that you deep fat fry with.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Biodiesel.
Biodiesel.
But you get below a certain temperature, and it's a candle.
Yeah.
But you're right, Mark. It's ideal to take it down to Des Moines because they want it, because they do have a byproduct from it. But it's just really expensive to run a truck down it all the way down, you know.
What's going to happen to this ground? You keep applying that like that.
See what we're building up.
It's going to get to the point where it's not going to take anymore.
Right. And I think it's done. Yeah.
Are they putting the septic tank stuff on there too, out of septic tanks?
Yes. And they don't, apparently they don't do any car washes, so it's not
that.
That's
how we learn.
Does that gross you out? Did it smell?
Yeah, I can imagine.
This looked fine. Earl Sanitation, he just needs to get way better at record keeping, so that way better. He's still working on what, 3 years ago, Matt? 4 years ago?
That is an access road to some wind turbines. Where is that physically? Puts his on.
What?
I've got, Journey Tech. Where is Earl? I mean, I'm looking at some wind turbines there. That's an access road to work on. Mm-hmm. Where is that?
I can't think of the address right now. I will send that to you.
Right.
It's up. It's like a Zering. In Lincoln Township.
Oh, you don't have to. That's all I was looking for.
Lincoln Township.
Straight
guy. Yeah. And, but he does have one.
He's
on
the way out.
And
he didn't quite make it. Okay. Thank you, Margaret.
You're welcome. Special Projects, Squaw Valley South. I continue to work with them. I went and gave a talk to them, and I get a lot of calls, but they're still haven't decided if they're going to do on-sites or replace the system. And then Kathy sent out a notice of violations for the folks that didn't have current maintenance contracts on their septic systems. And we did, so all the things that go across planning and development's desk go across our desk as well for our input on environmental health things. It's nice to be able to have input on those projects that are coming into the county. Training and meeting, I can't remember the time frame, but Matt and Kathy did get their CPO certification. I'll be getting mine in June. I went to an Iowa troubleshooting on-site thing, social media, sexual harassment premier tech maintenance meeting we had, very helpful. So just lots of meetings, discussions going on. And if you have any questions?
You didn't show the map of Grant 5.
That was because that was before the last meeting, whereas the Board of Supervisors, remember?
Margaret, on behalf, in addition to being a supervisor, I'm a trustee to all the drainage districts. And Margaret, since it's an oversized one and it encompasses the annexation portion or a lot of it, of what Ames did. She had a map overlay showing where they were on current septic systems and were non-current. At least she identified it as the people that have a plan. Someone want to help me here? Explain your story.
Record. NPN record.
Record on file with the county. And there clearly are some through just age alone or staying in a family that they are not, they might have an original issue with septic system.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Margaret.
You're welcome.
Okay. Any comments from staff?
Anybody?
Comments? We talked enough. Comments from the board? I can give an update on the emergency response plan. I met with Sherry and Teresa 2 weeks ago, I think it was. Yeah. And we went through annexes C and D. Those proved to be a little more challenging than the previous ones have been. So they're working on some things, and then we'll meet again when we.
Thank you for your time there.
Next week. So
yes.
We're making progress.
I also went to, we have pod sites where we would hold Gates Hall and Three Seats Huxley and get the MOUs. I'm working on, the man is waiting to present it to the city council meeting because there's been new directors, public health nurse, who's going to resign. So Huxley signed theirs right away.
Okay.
Okay.
Anything else from anybody?
I have nothing.
Okay.
Reminder to go vote today.
Do we have that plan updated for RAGBRAI, like cooling stations, emergency, what if we have a tornado come through?
This is more specific. The plan we're working on is more infectious disease type stuff. So
to that end, I don't mean to interrupt, but you have a meeting between the responsive departments, as in secondary roads, the sheriffs, Board Supervisor, I don't know if we're even, but Rick would probably go to that one, but all the responsive parties in regards to the county's planning for moving through the, you know, with the RAGBRAI on the 24th and 25th. Because really, you're only seeing it coming from Slater of R38 into Ames, and then since Ames and Nevada touch, you really don't get back into the county until you're on the east side of Nevada. And that's really 10 more miles till you're in Marshall County. But clearly, I think that we will, as far as you saw in the paper, there are some counties that aren't letting anybody do anything. We just don't want a vendor doing it in the our right-of-way. So you can step back onto the same property. Just don't put it in a portion of the center of the road till I think it's 40 feet or 50 feet. I can't remember. So we just say, please stay away from the road, leave it free for emergency vehicles and or riders. So, but you have a planning meeting, and this is the 5th, I think, tomorrow night. So stay tuned, I'm sure that'll be reported on.
Any other questions?
No.
Discussion? All right. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.